Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and after 2.5 years of construction and a decade of legal battles, public hearings, red tape, Brooklyn's newest architectural icon is finally open. Home to the Brooklyn Nets, the Barclays Center's first event is scheduled for this Friday as Nets co-owner Jay-Z begins a sold-out 8-night residency. We've been following the arena's progress from the beginning when it was known as the Atlantic Yards controversy. And now that it's open, we're curious to see how its developers did in staying true to their original plans and to the promises they made to the borough, namely jobs, housing, hoops. So joining us now is New York Times correspondent Charles Bagley, who covers New York real estate and development. Hi, Charles. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
And listeners, we'll open the phones for you. And of course, our website is up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Folks, New York Magazine has a great cover story this week prompted by the Barclays Center opening in which they ask, is Brooklyn finished? And what they mean by that is Brooklyn so successful that it's no longer cool? So is Brooklyn over for you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and anything on the promises of jobs, housing, and hoops. So let's start with the first point, and that is jobs. Charles, how is the Barclays Center doing in terms of employment? What do the jobs numbers look like, and how do they compare to what was promised?
Well, first of all, when I cover these kinds of developments, I try to avoid using the numbers because they can be very misleading or very concocted. But first of all, the company claims there are 2,000 jobs. So let's boil down that number. What that means is there are, they would say, about 200 full-time positions, you know, basically maintaining the and cleaning this edifice. And then there's another 1,800 people who are event-based jobs. And these are part-time positions, although they're booking a lot of activity, so they might get a 40-hour week. When you boil it all down, it comes to 1,240 full-time equivalents. So as you can see, the number is a little bit misleading. But obviously, there are jobs there.
Even that number, as you gave it, would be about half of what they promised for a 2-year time span, right?
Well, the numbers that were thrown about got as high as 10,000, and that you know, there's mixed in there is the arena is only one element of this much larger development. It's only about a quarter of it, and you know, you're supposed to have 15 residential buildings, one office building, which means if it's 1 million square feet and you have 250 square feet per worker, you know, you've got thousands of workers there as well, thousands of office workers. So the 10,000 number is, you know, yet to come and may never get that high.
And among those who cited the 10,000 number was Chuck Schumer in 2004 in supporting the project. He said 10,000 jobs. This year, 35,000 people showed up to a jobs fair there for 2,000 jobs. So we see what the situation is in the borough. And obviously a lot changed that I guess is out of the developer's control because of the recession and the bursting of the real estate bubble.
Now, there's also some indirect activity that takes place as a result of the arena. You know, the arena and stadiums, for that matter, tend to be these self-contained engines. You know, they've got restaurants. They have all kinds of sports shops where you can buy those things. But presumably, some people will be coming early, and they might they'll go to a restaurant nearby, so that you've got more activity there. They may go to a different place to buy the caps and T-shirts and other sports paraphernalia. So there is no question there is some impact, and if you're going to be anywhere, these things probably should be next to a transit hub.
So the three promises of the developer: jobs, housing, hoops. We talked about jobs. We'll get to housing in a minute, but let's take some of the phone calls that are coming in from people who live in or around the area. Jezra in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. You know, Charles is painting a very rosy picture, saying that the 10,000 jobs haven't happened yet. That's not going to happen. That was a total fantasy of Senator Schumer's. And in terms of people leaving the arena, the shop in the neighborhood, that's just not borne out by any of the research on any sports stadium around the country. In fact, you know, the neighborhood has been decimated. Hundreds of people were driven from their homes. And this is nothing but a giant bait and switch on the neighborhood from beginning to end. You end up with a ball team that's owned by a Russian billionaire with part-time, seasonal, bad jobs at a fraction of the amount that was promised. You end up with almost no affordable housing. If you define affordable by the median income in Brooklyn, there are going to be less than 30 units of housing that are affordable to the average Brooklynite in this new tower that Mr. Ratner is trumpeting. We are not going to get to 2,500 units of affordable housing. And by the way, somebody making $100,000, that's great, but most people in Brooklyn can't afford that.
Jezra, thank you very much. One unhappy neighbor of the new Barclays Center. So, Charles Bagley, let's move on to housing. And what about the numbers she was giving there? Again, promise compared to reality.
Well, the idea here when it was first presented to the public was that you would have almost the simultaneous development of the arena, up to 6,300 apartments, at least a third of which would be for low, median, or middle-income families, and public spaces, park. As we can see, all that's been built so far is the arena. So critics are measuring the what's been accomplished so far against what was promised. I didn't realize I was painting a rosy picture, but if that's the case, I'm fairly skeptical of job numbers, and I try to not put them into my story unless they become an issue in and of themselves. Schumer didn't invent the 10,000. This is a number that was used in some of the state documents and in trying to evaluate the cost benefit of this project. You know, well, if the state and the city are putting in together $300 million in capital investment, then what is the public getting back for that? Mm-hmm. And part of what they're getting back was supposed to be all these jobs and a great deal of affordable housing.
And so will now, the opening of the Barclays Center accelerate the progress on those 12 planned buildings for phase two that are supposed to include affordable housing?
Well, Mr. Ratner, the developer, said that he will start the first of 15 residential buildings by the end of the year. Those dates tend to have come and gone in the past, but it looks like at least one building will go up, and it's supposed to have something like 383 units, half of which will be what's called affordable housing. Now, affordable housing is often in the eyes of the beholder. It's a mix of low-income, middle-income, and moderate-income, and those categories are all defined by the federal housing officials. But as for the others, I think the housing is something separate from the arena, because you've got to look at what's the demand for this housing. At the peak of the market, during the last real estate boom, there were 7,000 units built in all of Brooklyn in 1 year. So here you're talking about 6,300 units in one small neighborhood in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a long process.
Right. And, of course, there would always be demand for affordable housing. What you're talking about is a lot of the market rate housing on which Ratner hopes to make most of his money. And by setting aside a percentage of that, is it 20%, as affordable housing. That's where those affordable units would come from. But the demand for the market rate housing is going to have to be there for them to proceed.
Yes. Now, it's actually for the overall number, he's promised that at least 30% would be affordable, which is a pretty high goal. And we'll see whether these numbers are ever met.
Listeners in Brooklyn, are you psyched or are you cringing about the opening of the Barclays Center this week? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Bob in Park Slope, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, hi. You know, I am cringing, and, you know, they claim they have 200 dates booked already. Now, and this is 19,000 people, and perhaps they're being dropped off by folks in cars. You can barely move in my neighborhood now. It's dangerous to ride a bicycle. It's dangerous to cross the street. And to me, this was all done, you know, in a way that's reminiscent of some kind of thuggery, taking people's homes by eminent domain for a commercial enterprise like this. Further, this is a stadium that should have been out in Coney Island. The housing, maybe that's okay, but a stadium should have been Coney Island, where people need jobs, where poor people live in two fare zones. If we can fill a minor league stadium for baseball, and we could certainly get people to go to the Nets, where Staten Island...
Wouldn't it need to be closer in than Coney Island and at more of a transit hub like Atlantic Avenue is?
Long Island empties into Brooklyn by the Belt Parkway. We have major street parkways like Ocean Parkway. In addition, we have the Verrazano Bridge emptying practically right into Coney
right.
Island.
Cars, and the F train, but is that enough?
But two trains. But here's what I really want to say. I ran into Congressman Schumer at the Seventh Heaven several years back, and I said, listen, I don't think this is good for the neighborhood. He said, well, look, I live in the neighborhood too, and I can't get jobs, and I can't get housing, you know, and this will be very good for the neighborhood. Then I opened the Times some period of time later, New York Times, and I see up at his place on Prospect Park West, we have Harry Reid, who needs to raise money. And who's there but Mr. Ratner? And they're all at 9 Prospect Park West, at this tete-a-tete for fundraising. So I feel like, who am I? You know, I really have a say, and is this the way things go?
Schumer support. I take your point. Schumer supports his project. He donates money to the Democrats' campaigns. I'm shocked, Charles, shocked to hear that anything like that would go on.
Well, just to come back to this point about that intersection, it is a monster. I can recall trying to go through there on a Saturday afternoon when nothing was going on. I was visiting my daughter who lived out in Park Slope, and it took forever to get through that intersection. Now, on the other hand, if you look at Madison Square Garden in New York, they've got a very high percentage of their fans, the Knicks fans, who come by public transportation. What's going to happen at Atlantic Yards? Will there be a very high percentage of people that come by public transportation? You've got, 9 subway lines there and then the LIRR. If they're coming by cars, it's going to be a mess.
We said jobs, housing, and hoops, the three promises from the Ratner Corporation. Here's a comment about hoops. Comes from Harlem World, or it says FUVA in Harlem World. And I asked people, are you cringing or are you psyched at the Barclays Center arrival? And FUVA writes, I'm cringing at how psyched I am about a Knicks-Nets rivalry, but I'll be attending no games in person and catching all games on TV. Ha. So I assume that's for financial purposes. But have you been looking at ticket prices? I saw the tickets for the Nets games will start as low as $7, and you can't get into a Knicks game for anything like that.
No, it's a better value. We'll see where everything shakes out. You know, how much these seats, how many people are really going to show up for the game. Anytime there's a new arena or stadium that opens, there's always a sort of novelty effect. For a year, people want to come in and check it out, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, if the Nets don't perform, I can't imagine that arena is going to be full.
Jeffrey in Manhattan. No, I'm sorry. I meant to take... Abiola in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. are you doing,
okay.
Brian? My wife's an architect, and we've basically watched the construction of this. And as one of the callers mentioned before, the traffic is absolutely horrendous. But more so than anything else is the facade, that pre-weathered steel. I did some research to try to figure out exactly why they went with that design, and it was supposed to evoke the brownstones in Brooklyn, which absolutely is ridiculous to me. I don't understand.
You don't like it. You just don't like the way it looks.
I don't like it. It's ridiculous. And, you know, I doubt that they'll ever paint it, because I'm sure the amount of money or the cost associated with painting that would be insane. And but it's just an ugly building.
Abiola, one of your neighbors, I guess, Kathy in Park Slope, writes on our comments page, "Looks to me like an alien spaceship has landed in my neighborhood. Hope the aliens are friendly."
Might as well be, you know.
thank you very much. Although Charles Bagley, New York Times real estate reporter, it's getting some rave reviews from architecture critics.
Yes, I mean, this originally was going to be a Geary-designed arena. You know, you had a world-famous architect. Subsequently, Geary was jettisoned, and they brought in Shop Architects, which is an up-and-coming firm. It wasn't a schlocky firm, but I'll leave the aesthetics to others. It's definitely changed the landscape there. This was a really windswept intersection, and now you've got the arena rising 130 feet on one side of the street, and then two malls, which are actually a little taller, on the other side of the street, both built by the same developer, Bruce Ratner, and you get something of a tunnel effect now where the wind just used to sweep through there.
Well, it is the week that the Barclays Center is opening. We have a board full of disgruntled Brooklynites, other people may be psyched for the entertainment that's going to come. We try to assess it in terms of the progress so far on the three promises to the community: jobs, housing, and hoops, with Charles Bagley, who covers New York real estate and development for the New York Times. We'll talk probably later in the week a little more about the architecture, just what the building looks like standing there. It's getting some pans and some raves, and we'll cover the Barclays Center and the Nets as it all goes forward, and the jobs and the housing, too. Charles, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the UN General Assembly coming to town means the Clinton Global Initiative also coming to town. We'll meet two guests from the CGI finding new ways to fund philanthropy, beginning with none other than Philippe Cousteau of the ocean-exploring Cousteau family. He's using the stock exchange to raise money for his work in Congo that links the environment and women's rights. It's going to be interesting. Stay with us.